And given the absence of any adversary, I don't have to ask if you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
Good morning, everyone. May it please the court. My name is Steve Hand. I represent Mr. Moore, who is present. I think what you've read, the parameters and facts of the case, are pretty straightforward. And I'll add, I've never seen anything quite like it. I don't know if you have in my research, which quite frankly, I'd give a C minus at best. Didn't even find anything quite on point like this in Virginia. But what you have before you is the agreement was drafted by prior counsel in 2005. It was executed by the parties in 2005. Mr. Moy was not represented at that time. And it stated in the agreement, paragraph 5, that husband was required to pay to wife $350 per month to help household bills until divorce is final or wife obtains full-time employment. She did not obtain full-time employment for a variety of reasons. The elephant in the room is there is no defining term as to when that would commence.
Well, pursuant to contract law, counsel, when would that begin? I appreciate, and of course we've read and researched what you provided, and we know what your position is.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
If let's say it's just a basic contract, why would it not be enforceable as of the date that it's fully executed?
Well, I differentiate with all the respect to Judge Sella's ruling in his opinion piece in which he cited the case. The distinction between this case and something which is time sensitive. And let me give you actually a perfect example of what's going on here in the city with construction, which is quite frankly everywhere. If there was a owner who was going to put up the skyscrapers, and of course he had a general contractor, but the owner could negotiate directly with the subcontractor for a better price. And so the owner had negotiated directly with the subcontractor to say, I need 10,000 steel I-beams. It's in the contract. The general contractor tends to break ground on June the 1st. But there's silence as to when the steel I-beams will be delivered. There's just a discussion of when the ground will be broke, June the 1st, and then the steel I-beams are never delivered. And so the owner has to go to other sources. He's losing money hand over fist, okay? So in that example, the subcontractor, the steel producer, would say, well, listen, it's silent as to when I was supposed to deliver the steel I-beams, which is correct, but it's obvious it's a time-sensitive transaction because the general contractor can't produce it without the steel. So that's just a difference on the general contractor of reasonableness, something which is a time-sensitive transaction, which is obviously built into the contract.
What about here, the very last sentence of the separation agreement?
Very last sentence.
This agreement becomes effective on the day and date first above written. Doesn't that supply a date if none else is there?
Judge, Your Honor, I respectfully suggest that it should have been built into the paragraph as to when the payments were to begin.
And I couldn't agree more that if there's a specific clause in there, it's certainly going to take precedence over the general. But absent a specific clause, doesn't that say that it's effective on execution, essentially?
I would respectfully disagree because ordinarily, under contract principles, it's a clearly defined term that it would begin at a certain date, it would end at a certain date. And you'll notice what the prior court, Judge Sellers, stated, the issue of reasonableness. But then that begs the question, if you're going by a kind of a standard of reasonableness, again, which would be in a time-sensitive transaction, then would it be reasonable that this would be carried out for whatever reason? We don't know why. I wasn't privy for over a decade. That obviously is unreasonable when the prior court ruled the issue of reasonableness was paramount, and that's how he, quite frankly, that was the basis of the ruling. So a drafter of the contract Beg your pardon, Judge.
Why is it unreasonable necessarily that it could have continued for over a decade when it's an open-ended negotiated provision?
It would be, all of this was in contemplation, obviously, contemplation of a divorce. And the parties have separated, they had basically divvied up their lives.
Which one of the other party can pursue.
That's right, that's right. And for, again, and actually for whatever reason, they didn't do it. I couldn't tell you why. There's no evidence before the court. We simply do not know why. But the issue of, I would suggest to the court that on one hand, I don't see how, respectfully, you can say how one thing is reasonable. That is, this would be done with the payments would begin with a reasonable period of time, essentially as Judge Sellett ruled, essentially. But then to turn around and say, and so he said it would be reasonable for it to be done by this particular date, just kind of filled in the blank. Versus then you would say it would be also reasonable to be extended for over a decade.
Because that's what the parties agreed to. And absent some evidence, perhaps that Mr. Moy was prevented by his then-wife from seeking a divorce, why would the court, absent some legal reason for doing so, then thwart the agreement of the parties as to when the payments would terminate?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Why would Judge Selina be in a position essentially to change the agreement of the parties? The agreement was that the payments would continue until the divorce, until the time the final decree was entered. And if no one seeks the final decree for 6 months, for a year, for 10 years, for 20 years, you know, that's what the parties agreed to. Why is it left for the court to then change the terms of the agreement?
Well, it's not. Actually, it's not because the court should not basically plant or supplant the desires of the parties or try to discern the desires of the parties or the wishes of the parties or the agreement of the parties rather than something which is patently built into the agreement. So
because
right.
That was specifically built into the agreement.
Right.
It might not have been a known date at the time, but it was a fixed point in time at which the payment should cease.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. So I guess our gripe, our concern with the prior ruling is that a court should not basically write out a term of a particular agreement when the parties could have very clearly done that themselves, which would be in paragraph 5. So, and it just simply wasn't done. It just simply was not done. Then Mr. Moy wakes up, believing this was done, wakes up over a decade later and goes, well, I got a bill for $40,000. Well, time out. You know, again, I know that's not necessarily before the court in terms of evidence because again, too much time had passed. But the issue of a time-sensitive transaction versus this was not a time-sensitive transaction versus that example I gave you with the builder and the subcontractor and whatnot. Also, we have, I would suggest, the difference between a latent ambiguity and a patent ambiguity. That's what was built in paragraph 5, I would suggest, is a patent ambiguity built into the contract. So I use a true, but somewhat true, but a humorous example, difference between latent and patent. A good friend of mine is Jewish. His wife is Chinese American. They were split up. Something were to begin at the new year. Put in there to begin at the new year. Well, is it the Jewish New Year, which they recognize in that family, the Chinese New Year, they recognize in that family, or the Western New Year? So that is obviously a latent ambiguity, and you would have to, that would not be drafted, or I guess penalized against the drafter of the contract. But in this one, I would suggest that there's a patent ambiguity built into paragraph 5. It just simply, it's absent as to when it would begin. So I think that's, I don't know why. I just don't know why it's not there. If it's an oversight, I don't know why. But it's not there. And prior counsel is not involved in this particular case. Ms. Moishe hired new counsel, and so then all of us show up over a decade later just trying to figure this thing out. So this is where we are.
Yes, sir.
So, anyone else have any? Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hannah. We'll come down and greet